All right, we're back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Of course, it's Friday morning, and it's always our favorite time of the week to talk to Charles Davis, who's calling Giants and Eagles on Sunday in Philly. We got a Saturday, Sunday set up, obviously, with it being the last week of regular season football here in the NFL. I don't know what you've got on deck in terms of what you're most excited for, but I've been telling you about that Lions game that I have circled on the calendar, hopefully with a lot of meaning, and here we are with just that.
I think it's both primetime games. I'm interested in Jags-Titans Saturday. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the final game of the NFL season, regular season game, Packers and Lions Sunday. Can't get better than those two.
We're obviously always excited for anything that Charles calls. And he's our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Charles Davis, NFL and CBS color analyst, calling Giants Eagles on Sunday in Philly. Hi, Charles. Happy New Year. Merry Christmas and happy holidays.
And the same to you both. I hope you're both well. And hard to believe we're at the final week of the NFL season, although I guess some discussion, although my understanding is that they've decided not to play that last Cincinnati-Buffalo game. So we'll see how it all breaks down. But it is supposed to be the last week of the NFL season, which is hard to believe. I feel like we just started talking last week.
I mean, it's not a great question, but what's this week been like for you since DeMar Hamlin's injury? How you've absorbed and unpacked the story and where we're at now?
I think it's been very similar to all of ours who love sports, who care about people. It was one of those things where you hear about a friend, a neighbor, you know, anyone that has a catastrophic injury, and you just feel for everyone, right? Everyone around them, what they're going through. Hopefully that person will make it. It's rare that you see these things play out on national television. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we are, I don't like the word desensitized, because I don't think we really are, but I think we grow a shell, or we all have coping mechanisms when people get hurt seriously in the sports we love. But that obviously was different than anything we've probably all witnessed, experienced, everything else. And that was our first thought, was, okay, how was he going to come out of it? And I really think that yesterday, with the news that he's awake, communicating by writing, appears to be neurologically okay. I think one of the doctors said that, said the lights are on and he's home, you know, and that was just huge to hear that. I think it gives the NFL a chance to breathe a little bit and kind of resume doing what people do, which is play ball. And I hope it doesn't sound callous. I hope it doesn't mean, well, business as usual, because it's certainly not that. I think that if he had not come out of that yesterday, I think it might have put some games in doubt for this weekend, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult for people to look at and watch, especially for the Buffalo team, you know? Can they really play not truly knowing how he's going to be? I think you guys saw the press conferences and people talking. And, you know, I'm not a psychologist. I don't read body language well. I don't do any of those things. But I thought relief was incredibly evident in each person that spoke.
It's relieving in certainly more important ways, but it does seem like the NFL can move forward with its season. As you mentioned, I don't know if games would have been in doubt. I don't know if the Bills would have been able to play or play safely. I think that's a consideration that should have been out there. But the NFL can, I think, in at least good conscience, move forward here and make preparations for Week 18 and beyond. However, there is a tricky situation in front of them with the game canceled. Yeah. The standings are as they are. I don't know if they've even, I think they might be waiting to see if Kansas City wins on Saturday to make firm decisions. But what do you think the right path forward is for the NFL as they try to piece together the AFC playoffs?
Yeah, Justin, as you point out, there's no easy path. I don't know that there's one that we'll come down on that said is the right path. They'll have to make a decision. Everyone will have to live with it. My understanding is that the owners are going to speak today and convene about this and have a discussion, because there's so many permutations that come out of it. You know, the Cincinnati-Buffalo game was going to set us up for what we would know for seeding for the last week of the season. You know, would Cincinnati have already clinched the AFC North? You know, would Buffalo be in a perfect position to clinch this week versus New England? That game was supposed to answer a good number of questions. Now, if you don't play it at all, which frankly I'm leaning towards, like I'm leaning towards that game being declared a no contest. You go to percentages, you have to do things. But now, okay, so that kicks Cincinnati out of having a chance at the number one seed. Does it give Kansas City an unfair advantage, considering they lost two, Buffalo and Cincinnati? I mean, all these things that come into play, that's what they're going to have to kick around and discuss. But I just don't know that they're going to want to take the rest of the playoffs, all those things, and throw that into a little bit of a turmoil. And likely eliminate the open week before the Super Bowl, because you'll have to use that week now if you're going to push things. I just don't know if they're going to want to do that, because that brings in a whole nother set of issues. So we'll see what they come down on. That's where I would go myself and just work my way through it. But, you know, they didn't call me or ask me. So we will see how that whole thing plays out.
That was the first thought that popped into my mind. But with no one really talking about that, I just feel like a non-option logistically. And I haven't really thought about it since. My thinking yesterday that was that maybe eight teams in the AFC was the best option. Yeah. And it seems like, I guess it was maybe on the table or not, or floated out there. I mean, maybe they were floating ideas out there to try to get a public opinion.
It's out there. The problem is it's not in the collective bargaining agreement.
Oh, okay.
You know, the CBA doesn't have
Can you make an emergency amendment? I don't know.
Right. That's a great question. And I'm sure, look, there's always provisions to do different things. I'm sure the commissioner has ultimate veto power or, you know, broad powers. I'm sure those things are in there. But no one likes to, you know, exercise those unless they absolutely have to.
Yeah.
Right. So they would love to have everyone have a consensus and do all that before we get there. But that is definitely something that I know is out there, is being discussed, adding an 18. There's a discussion about next week, the NFC playoffs proceed, the AFC holds up while Cincinnati and Buffalo play. Then you come back to something else. A lot of different ways they're going to have to go about doing this and provide information for each other before they make a decision.
Yeah, I think the only justification for eight teams is like, okay, if you're the one seed, especially now with seven teams, you get a massive, massive advantage. Home field plus the bye. Right. If you just, you know, diminish the advantage a little bit, does it make people happy? Because if you do go by the end of season records, if it's canceled, Kansas City, if they win, will have the best record by points percentage, but maybe they don't deserve the world because it was an incomplete NFL season. And I guess you throw one more team in the mix and there's a little bit more intrigue. I guess you're trying to make the best of it. But again, as you mentioned, there's so many different things to consider that it's, you know, if there was a right answer, we wouldn't be still talking.
Yeah. Good point. And I'll leave it with this. If Kansas City had not lost to Buffalo and Cincinnati, their closest pursuers, I think there'd be even less discussion about it. People would go, okay, look, you know, they're clearly number one team, but they lost to both. Yet they still are in a position where they could be the number one seed. I don't know that that'll sit as well with people. And now there's also a discussion about, well, what if Kansas City is number one seed? Do they still deserve to really have the home playoff? Now they're talking about neutral site. So it's so many ways to go at it. I don't think that, you know, I don't know what the right expression is, but you know how hard we try to be fair in everything. There's always someone who's going to say, guess what? That's not fair for us.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you finally resolve it? Because otherwise you don't. You come to a standstill, and we all know that that's not going to happen.
Well, certainly unprecedented situation. Most importantly is that DeMar Hamlin's moving forward in a positive direction.
Yes.
And that's all we can hope for. And the rest is unfortunate circumstances that we have to deal with. But in the end, most important thing is that there's some positive progress.
And Ailish, really quick, I'm sorry about this.
I don't know.
The first responders. I mean, we talk about first responders mm-hmm. during times of school shootings, right?
Mm-hmm.
what happens, you know, in horrible situations in neighborhoods, communities, things of that nature. Those first responders got to him and saved his life.
That's right.
Right in front of all of us, even if we weren't aware it was happening in real time. Right? We know now that that's what was happening there. When I heard Lisa Salter say that they were loading him into the ambulance and then put him back on the ground and had to start performing CPR, whoa. I think that's where we saw the reactions of the Buffalo players, when we saw the extra reactions that we saw, right? I think that's now telling me that's what they saw. Like, hold it a minute. You're putting him in. Why are you taking him back out? What? And I think that, you know, obviously, could you imagine being there and that's your teammate and that's your brother? So those first responders on the scene, getting it done one more time, the unsung heroes of our world. And yes, we applaud everyone else out there. My colleagues who broadcast the game and brought us the information, I thought did an exceptional job all the way around. All those things, but let's face it, we're not having this discussion at all if the first responders aren't there to save that man's life. And once again, we thank them.
Yeah, and we mentioned it was Denny Kellington who started to administer CPR, the Bills' assistant athletic trainer, and obviously was extremely vital. He saved a life. So we're glad that we have the name, and we can certainly share that information as well.
Thank you for doing
that. Of course.
Thank you both for sharing that information. That's fantastic.
All right, so you're going to be in Philly this weekend, Eagles hosting the Giants. Both teams playoff bound, but obviously the Eagles have a lot to play for coming off back-to-back losses, looking to secure the NFC number one seed. How important is it that Jalen Hurts gets in some action here before the playoffs, and I guess with the massive implications that they could be clinching number one seed?
Yeah, I think if he's able to go and get some work in, obviously that's wonderful. But they're not looking at it as him going and getting work in. They're about him going and securing the number one seed, as you talked about, and securing the division. Because remember, if they did to do all that, he can continue to heal, rest, and get that open week and practice that way. But at the same time, if he's not 100%, they're going to have to go and bid shoot and figure out a way. And I really think a lot of that, everybody wants to point at Minshew as being the issue, and this was the problem. I watched the games they lost. He wasn't truly the problem. Like, last week, they were terrible on offense. There's no getting around it. But Minshew didn't have 8 penalties, 6 of them on the offensive line. Okay? That wasn't Minshew, all right? People would know, what was it, the Gates? No, that wasn't him. Were they off a little bit throwing the football? Sure, but they still created a big play with A.J. Brown. Mm-hmm. I mean, defense played really well. They just were not efficient. They just weren't the normal, you know, executors that we've seen all year long. The Dallas game, they were a little bit more. So I just think that they can do this with him. If Hurts isn't 100%, you do lose the quarterback run game. Now, Minshew can do some of it, but he's not going to do it like Hurts would. Now, the flip side is, if Hurts plays this week, I would just ask both of you, shoulder injury, which happened because he ran it, you know, what, 16 times or whatever in that freezing cold in Chicago and took a hit, what have you. How much would you run him in this game? Even if you bring him back and play him. That's a whole nother dimension of their offense that now you're having to take away in order to make sure he's okay. Will they run him? It might. I'm just looking at it as a person observing, understanding, and thinking to myself, if I'm bringing Jalen Hurts back, am I running him 15 times in this game in design quarterback runs? I don't think so.
Well, I think the Eagles have the benefit of the New York Giants being firm in their playoff spot and probably with similar intentions in that they want to rest their guys. They want to make sure that everyone's healthy for their game the upcoming week. So maybe you can limit the package for Jalen Hurts, just get the throwing arm sort of sorted as for a couple drives, hopefully get a lead and sit on it. It'll be interesting to see how that one plays out with the Eagles are a big, big favorites in that game. Not that, you know, it really matters in week 18 for postseason positioning, but at least the expectation is that the Giants won't put forth a full effort. Two teams that have to put forth a full effort Saturday night, Tennessee Titans and Jacksonville Jaguars. Yeah. The Titans had like a pseudo off week where they sat everyone and attempts to get really healthy and really prepared for the Jaguars in this game. But the reality is they're left with Josh Dobbs at quarterback and in a head-to-head matchup versus Trevor Lawrence, this Trevor Lawrence, it seems that's like almost an impossible task to overcome. Do you give the Titans much hope with Vrabel at the helm with a couple weeks to prepare and maybe a little bit of a rested squad?
I actually do, and I wonder how much of mine is because I do call their games in preseason. I feel like I know this team a little bit better than maybe some others and know the personalities, et cetera. So sometimes you have that you bring with you. You know, you're around this group. I like these people. I can't believe the three of us are having this discussion. Truthfully, when you think about where we were midseason and where we are now, there's no way we thought we'd be talking about this game being a win and in type of a game. It just didn't seem fathomable. But I do give them a chance, and here's why. Vrabel, as we talked about, you mentioned them getting a little bit of extra rest because it kind of, you know, almost a pseudo-open week. They didn't play a lot of guys against Dallas. Dobbs now has been with the team for multiple weeks, so you could probably run a little bit more offense. But that begs the question of, if you're playing Josh Dobbs in this game, what the heck happened with Malik Willis, who you drafted in the third round? You know, I don't think we're at Zach Wilson proportions. But if you're sitting him down in a game like this, when you made him your number two quarterback in preseason, which meant you expected him to be able to play in case something happened to Ryan Tannehill, and you think your better option is a guy you picked up 2.5 weeks ago, there's a whole lot of other questions that'll be in the offseason for the Titans and Malik Willis. But being the here and now, that means I hope Derrick Henry's getting as much rest as possible. I hope the offensive line understands the task in front of them. My prediction on formula is 30 or more carries for Henry, average somewhere around 4 yards a carry, and hopefully Dobbs can hit a few shots off of the play action and the boots that'll come as a result. It doesn't have to be pretty. They just got to find a way to slog it out and really make this game messy with Jacksonville. Because right now Jacksonville is looking like a team ascending. The sprinting part is happening for them now with Lawrence, Travis Etienne. They look like the Clemson duo again. They're making plays out on the perimeter. The defense is coming along. They look like that team. I think if you're Tennessee and you can turn into any type of a street fight that's just nasty, messy, that gives them an opportunity. So I definitely give them a shot because there was a reason they got out to a 7-2 start. It's not the same guys there, but the core of this team is pretty strong. Let's see if they can give it one more effort and find a way and salvage their season, because otherwise it's an epic collapse in this year.
Yeah, that Jacksonville run defense better be ready for this one. It's an interesting motivation week, right? I don't know. The Texans and Colts, I don't know if they can like out-tank each other in the moment, but we shall see. Justin Fields won't be playing for Chicago, but does Minnesota really want to win? I'm not sure about that either, because they might be better off taking the loss with postseason seeding. But one team we don't have to worry about with motivations, I think, is the Pittsburgh Steelers. Not because it's a real possibility they get into the playoffs if they beat Cleveland, but because Mike Tomlin seems to be, you know, we're talking about the upper echelon of coaches. He continues to find a way to have his team play for him. And the record or the streak of having plus 500 seasons, they have a chance to prolong it. What is the power of Mike Tomlin?
Earlier this year, I remember my dad called me and he said, you know, did you see the post game such and such, Pittsburgh? I forgot who they had beaten, what have you. Oh, I remember what it was. It was the season opener, Cincinnati, the game we did. And the Steelers had 5 takeaways and should have won going away and somehow ended up in a major fight. And you remember the Cincinnati long snapper got hurt and had 2 bad snaps, and that helped decide the game. Pittsburgh somehow upset Cincinnati in the opener. And one of his players said something. They asked about Coach Tomlin. He said, there's magic in that man. Now, does that really define it? I don't think so. But the statement says a lot about what you just talked about, Justin, how that team continues to believe in him, how he continues to make sure the team knows he believes in them. It's not a great Pittsburgh roster. I mean, this is not the normal roster we're looking at. We're talking about a quarterback change, go to a rookie. He's had his ups and downs, although he really came up big last week down the stretch against Baltimore. That offensive line, I don't know that there's any – they're that much better. But, boy, they sure ran the heck out of against Baltimore last week, which is something they've not been able to do well for the last 3 seasons in aggregate. he motivates by letting them know he cares, and they believe it. It's not just words. They live it. Ryan Clark, I don't know if you guys saw after the injury, he talked about, you know, remember when, you know, Ryan has sickle cell trait, and you go to play at altitude, and if you're not hydrated properly, all these things. And remember, he got really sick in Denver playing a game, and they ended up having to, I believe, remove his spleen and the whole deal before he came back and played. And the next time they were going to Denver, you know, he was at the office of Mike Tomlin saying, I'm ready to go. The doctors have cleared me. I'm this and that. And he said he was in there and a few other people. And finally, he said 5 minutes into his plea to play, Coach Tomlin was like, you think I'd let my son go do this? Get out of my office. You're not playing. And to me, it was just a microcosm of what we're talking about. Big picture, broad picture. They know he cares about them as people before player. And when you have that, that's pretty powerful. And they like to play for him. And everything you said, Justin, is on target. They are in a position. If they beat Cleveland and get some help, off they go. And Mike Tomlin will once again have a winning season. He's never had a losing season. He's had 500 seasons, but never losing in 15 years as a head coach, which is absolutely unbelievable, 15 or 16, which is just off the charts in today's NFL.
Charles, what was maybe a game that nobody really had circled for quite a while, but has become possibly the game of the final week is the primetime Sunday at Lambeau. Lions and Packers both managed to pull to 8-8 on the season. It's basically a win and get in for these two teams, more so for the Packers, of course. Lions have a couple other things to worry about. But what are your biggest questions heading into this showdown in terms of who's going to get the edge?
Well, everything seems to be pointing towards Green Bay, but I'm going to flip it around and say, let's not forget this Lions team. Their big hiccup was Carolina, 2 weeks ago, was it?
Yep.
And I don't think any of us saw that the way they were playing. They were playing so well, but they had the hiccup. That happened a lot in the growth process. But I do think they've got the perfect coach for this game for this reason. Alish, as you pointed out, it's not a true winning get in for Detroit. They will know if they can get in based on the results of the Seattle game ahead of them. So if Seattle loses, then they know their game against Green Bay is win and get in. But Dan Campbell has posited this thing perfectly. If right from the first press conference this week, those things will take care of itself. But the bottom line is we're playing Green Bay. We always play Green Bay. Doesn't matter whether the playoffs are on the line or not. Heck, if the worst thing is we're going to knock them out of their chance at the playoff, we'll take that because, you know, Green Bay, Detroit, they hate them. And I think he's put it in the heads of his players. Guys, we're not sitting there scoreboard watching, and our motivation is only if we can get in. Our motivation is to be professionals. Our motivation is to continue to build this program as we're putting it together so that it pays dividends starting next year if this year is not a chance to make the playoffs. And what better way to do it than to finish with a win? Knock Green Bay out of their chance of doing it, and go from there. And by the way, don't forget, we beat them earlier this year, so it's not like we're not capable. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where I think we might be missing a little bit. You know, Green Bay, and if Seattle wins and locks it down, I think most of America and people who love football are just going to go, Green Bay's fine now because Detroit has nothing to play for. I think that's about as far from the truth as it is. Mm-hmm. Detroit, but they have something to play for no matter what. And then we're going to get a heck of a game Sunday. I think Green Bay should win the ball game, but let me tell you something. Detroit, they're not going to make it easy at all. And if Detroit finds a way to win it, zero surprise from this side.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they're definitely one of my favorite teams to cheer for. They're gritty, and they will have a lot of pride, regardless of what happens before them. Okay, before I let we go, Charles, college football championship on Monday. We won't get a chance to talk to you before the final there, TCU and Georgia. Go Dogs, or I know it's tough for you because your team didn't make it, where are you falling?
Yeah, but I'm an SEC person, A-list, you know. Mm-hmm. And in the SEC, when you're not in it, you know, we're the only conference that at other bowl games when they announce scores, the SEC's winning, you hear an SEC champ break out. You know, it's just how we are. We are the ultimate. We will fight each other and hit you with tables and things of that nature, you know. But if somebody else comes in, then we band together. It's kind of one of those deals. Only we can do that to them. not you guys can't do that. So it's kind of that way. So, yeah, I'm rooting for Georgia. I think they're the better team. But TCU's playing awfully well. Love their momentum. I just think for Georgia, getting through Ohio State and now just going, okay, good, we're down to a one-game deal, that might be the breath that they have to get them through. Or remember the run the Patriots had when they were undefeated all the way through. And right at the end, that Giants team is pretty scrappy and tough gattle. Could TCU be like that for them? I'm rooting for Georgia. I expect Georgia to win, but I don't think it'll be as big as what people think it'll be.
Quickly, Charles, because I know we got to let you go. CJ Stroud, did he prove something to you in terms of NFL viability with his performance against Georgia?
I think it helped a lot in terms of how people view him. All the talents, attributes, all those things were there before, but that stage, how he played, how he had his team, you know, rallying and winning, and really essentially Marvin Harrison's concussion from a lot of people thinking they probably win that game. Yeah, I think that helped him a lot in terms of that. But it wasn't, you know, the stuff we saw him do was not, those were not things we had not seen him do before. But I think versus a team that he wasn't expected to do it against, yeah, that certainly helps him. But if you're asking me right here, right now, I'm taking Bryce Young from Alabama, first, last, and always, as we sit here today in the draft process. Can it change as we get closer to the draft? Absolutely. But I know this size question. I know this. I know that. Bryce Young's the best playmaker coming out in the draft this year, in my estimation. Plus, you're not going to get a kid with more character, more everything that you want in a quarterback. I mean, that young man is beyond impressive in my estimation, and for my time with him. But does CJ Stroud help? Oh, without a doubt.
Young over Stroud, SEC through and through, Charles.
Yeah, so through and through, and, you know, it's interesting because I'm seeing it. I said it last summer that was my guy, and it's very interesting to look now as you guys watch. Check it out and see. You'll see a lot of the draft nicks. It certainly seems like the momentum is really, really tilted to Bryce Young in a big way, and I was like, darn it, I should have taken out a billboard or an ad or something saying, I like Bryce Young before you guys do.
Well, go Dogs. We got 3 straight days of great football ahead. Charles, enjoy the call on Sunday, and thanks again for joining us every Friday.
I appreciate it. And thank you guys both for answering my text about hockey. Wayne Gretzky was in attendance at my game last week, and I didn't get a chance to meet him.
Oh, that's okay.
No, I was very bummed out about that. But just in case, and in case it came up on the broadcast, I wanted to make sure. I thought it was called Shinny. Mm-hmm. And you guys helped me out, so thank you both so much.
Anytime, Charles. Anytime you want to chat hockey or anything, we will respond to your text.
I appreciate that a bunch, but can you imagine the great one was in the house?
Oh, that's so cool. That's so cool. All right. Thanks, Charles. Best of luck this weekend.
We'll talk later.
Chat on Friday. Charles Davis, NFL and CBS color analyst. Cullen, a big game this weekend. They're all big.
Big-ish. Big for Jalen Hurts. Big for the Philadelphia Eagles. Still got to get the number one seed. It's just, it'll be interesting to see what all these games look like. It's tough to bet weekend 18, but
sure
we have that responsibility
ahead
of us.
All the puzzle pieces changed a lot of the lines, but we have to pick our pick-a-sides in the wake and rake. A lot that I'm very confident on, and a lot that I'm like, you know what, I could just throw it into the wind.
Where's your confidence level for our next segment?
I'm a little rattled a bit. I'm a little nervous.
It's okay. We'll just have fun. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
It will be fun, Jess. Everything we do is have fun on this show, but we're going to give her a go. Raptors tarot card readings, the inaugural debut of this segment that we have prepared for a very long time. That's next with Justin and Ailish on the Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590, The Fan.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, it's Friday on the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The Toronto Raptors are a conundrum. We could say that positively.
The future is unclear.
It could not be more in the middle. It can go one way. It could go another way. What day the winds blow is how we react to this team. Sometimes there is glimmers of hope, and sometimes it is a dark hole in our mornings. And so with that said...
And we will have more to consider, by the way, after they host the New York Knicks tonight.
That's right, bing bong.
We will continue to have to ask ourselves these questions. But when you're forced with a lot of questions, sometimes you need to seek outside guidance, counsel. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you need to ask people that are just important in your life. Sometimes you need to go to maybe an elder or someone who has some sort of influence. Other times, you let the spirits do the work.
Introducing.
And we're at the point now where we're going to let the spirits tell us what's next for the Toronto Raptors and certain members of the Raptors organization.
So we have acquired the illuminated tarot deck from Amazon. And for those of you that don't know what a tarot card deck is or tarot readings, here's a brief history lesson. It's a visual system of storytelling that encompasses a wide range of human emotion and experience. So this is back to the 15th century. And basically, we're going to read a card. We're going to pull a card that has to do with life, events, and interpreting how these might play out. Now, this is all interpretation.
Yes, that's the key word, because it's all about, like, the practice is about interpretation. It doesn't tell you the answer in plain sight. You have to look at the card, learn about the card, and then ask yourself how that is applicable to what you've asked mm-hmm. yourself.
Very open-ended questions. We're not going to say, will the Raptors win tonight? Like, this is more broad strokes. You shuffle the cards, which is a way to introduce an element of randomness and chance. So we have selected three questions, maybe four.
Now, other times, you know, part of this ritual might be like burning sage or doing something. But Ailish didn't want to cause a fire hazard.
That's
so
important.
For that reason, it's just the radio version
right here
of a tarot reading.
Okay, so I have the...
So shuffle up and deal.
I have the deck in my hands. This is blackjack. We're going to start with a question that is topical right now because Fred VanVleet was on J.J. Redick's podcast, The mm-hmm. Old Man and the Three, this week when
he was
in town.
We'll talk about that without the cards after.
But there's a lot of information that came out. It's like an hour-long podcast, of course. He's in town with ESPN for the Bucks game. So Fred VanVleet said some things that we'll play later that might influence how you feel about his season and how you feel about his future with the Raptors.
And may influence our interpretation of the card you're about to pull.
So our question and our inaugural tarot card reading is... Fred VanVleet's future with the Toronto Raptors. Just give us a layout.
It's more of a statement, but yeah, it can be a statement.
What is Fred VanVleet's future? I'm nervous. Is Fred VanVleet's
future? You got a lot of power in your hands right now.
With the Toronto Raptors organization.
One more quick shuffle and...
So I'm going to split the deck. And the card that has been selected is the King of Clubs.
The King of Clubs.
It's a beautiful card. Looks like a lioness or a lion in my interpretation originally. And Justin's going to read the official reasoning.
So the King of Clubs is also the King of Wands. And the King of Wands depicts a man who has in his hands a blossoming wand, which is said to represent creativity and life's passion. His throne, as well as his cape, are decorated with the salamander and the lion, which are symbols of fire and strength. The salamander that is biting his tail represents the affinity as well as the overall drive to move through all obstacles.
Okay. To
the robe is bright and orange, resembling a flame, while the crown is shaped like a tongue of fire. Let's go ahead and take a deeper dive into the symbolism behind the King of Wands. Is it upright or is it reversed, Ailish?
It's upright.
So the upright interpretation, the King of Wands or the King of Clubs, is leadership, vision, big picture, taking control, daring decisions, boldness, and optimism. Now, this may run counter a little bit to what we heard on the J.J. Redick podcast.
Wow, this is however, that might be his true feelings.
My interpretation of this is that we shouldn't worry ourselves too much with poor shooting nights.
Mm-hmm.
And that poor shooting nights, you know, stacked up together mean that his viability as a key member of the Toronto Raptors is shot. He still remains the leader of this team with vision and big picture attitude.
You said overcoming obstacles as well.
And the obstacle of the season is such. He can overcome this season the obstacles of poor shooting and disjointed roster and maybe a team that can't compete right now. Maybe there is a future for Fred VanVleet in Toronto.
Symbols of fire and strength, overcoming obstacles. That's been Fred VanVleet's career. Bet on yourself. Find that passion to be a leader. And I think that this is a very positive reading. I'm feeling more encouraged about Fred VanVleet and his future with the Toronto Raptors, because that's what it was about. His future with the Toronto Raptors organization. Overcoming.
I think the interpretation succinctly is that Fred and the Raptors will overcome.
All right. That's a great
start.
Okay.
You Toronto can bet on it now. Let's go.
Fred's not going anywhere. All right. So now I'll shuffle the deck once again, and this one is a very important question as well. What is the direction that Masai Ujiri takes the Toronto Raptors? Okay. Wouldn't we like to know the direction Masai Ujiri takes the Toronto Raptors? The six of clubs, Justin. Ooh. To me, this looks upside down as well. So I think that is very important. In the
six of clubs reversed. Six of clubs is also the six of wands. It depicts a man who is currently wearing a wreath of victory around his head.
Ooh.
He is depicted riding a horse through a crowd of people who are cheering. This does sound like Masai Ujiri.
Wow.
The horse is white, which is a well-known symbol of strength, purity, as well as success. The crowd is there to show the public's recognition for the achievements of the man riding the horse. Now, you said it was
upside down, though.
Upside down. So when upright, this means success, victory, triumph, rewards, recognition, and praise.
That's exactly what we're getting.
But when reversed, Dalish Forfar, this means failure. This means a lack of recognition. This means no reward and no achievement.
Wow.
I mean, this is apt too. Yes, he is the man currently wearing a wreath of victory around his head. However, this season is a failure. This season is not going as planned. He is still the person that we admire and extol. But he is experiencing failure this season for maybe the first time. What does that mean in the long term? I'm not really sure. Maybe it's that he'll always have his legacy, but maybe there aren't good days ahead or the best days ahead for Masai. It'll be hard to have a better day than he did in 2019. I don't know about this one. A little bit more interpretation, but it does fit Masai.
I've continued to do research during your reading, and the reverse six of wands, which we're holding, suggests that you had a fall from grace and did not receive the public recognition you were seeking.
Well, he did. He definitely did.
And this is so accurate. It's a bit spooky.
Let's leave that one as is, because I think it described, maybe it didn't answer our question, but it described Masai Ujiri's situation spot on.
Very apt reading.
One last one?
We have one more to do for you today. Scottie Barnes has had an incredible start to his NBA career. Rookie of the year. But this year has been a roller coaster ride of emotions. Scottie Barnes shows flashes of superstardom, but then shows three quarters of 0 points. It is very hard to determine the future of Scottie Barnes, which is why we have asked the tarot cards the following question. What are the prospects of superstardom in Scottie Barnes' career?
One last shuffle.
The Eight of Diamonds.
Eight of Diamonds.
This is a beautiful card, by the way.
The Eight of Diamonds.
Diamonds to me seems like a good thing.
The Eight of Diamonds, or the Eight of Pentacles in a different deck, or the one that I've pulled up here. It's a card that depicts a young man who is etching a pentacle shape.
Sorry, did you just say a young man?
Yes.
Oh my, okay, keep going. This is incredible.
Who is etching a pentacle shape into the eight golden coins, okay? The card symbolizes someone who is completely focused and absorbed in what they are doing. The town that is far in the background means that he's successfully isolated himself from the distractions so that he can fully concentrate on his task. The Eight of Pentacles refers to that moment in your life when you are dedicated to completing a certain task. Now, is the card upright or reversed?
I believe it was reversed.
Okay.
If it were upright,
it would represent skill, talent, craftsmanship, quality, high standards, expertise, mastery, commitment, all those good things. If reversed,
like
however,
a rookie of the year season.
If reversed, and maybe this season has been reversed, it suggests there's a lack of quality, a rushed job.
Justin.
Bad reputation, lack of motivation, mediocrity, laziness, low skill, dead end job. I think the Eight of...
Confirmed it was upside down.
The Eight of Diamonds, you said it was. The Eight of Pentacles is also what it can go by. Represents his story perfectly. It was upright in season one for Scotty Barnes. And it's been reversed here in season two. Now, that doesn't mean it can't be upright again. As it mentions, he symbolizes, or the card symbolizes, someone who is completely focused and absorbed in what they are doing. If he remains that way, do you not see upright?
I do.
In his future?
I'm just a little bit stunned by how accurate these have been.
The tarot cards are very powerful.
Like, I'm kind of worried. I don't want to, like, ask it about my future.
We're not asking about ourselves.
Like, I'm not ever asking a personal question to this deck because I will be...
Okay, let's snap. Can we snap out of tarot?
Wait, I want to do one more.
You...
I want to do one more about the Toronto Raptors because this is a question that
okay,
I have.
Okay, quickly.
Give us the current vibe, the feeling, the motivation, the relationship between the players and the coaching staff and the organization right now. I want an inside look into what the vibe is. Nine of Hearts.
The Nine of Hearts. In the tarot deck is also the Nine of Cups. The Nine of Cups. On this card, there's a middle-aged man sitting on a wooden bench while his arms are crossed. His face is showing, quite a level of contentment. He is dressed elegantly and has a look of true satisfaction. The headdress on his head is a depiction of an active mind. Now, I guess the key here, because we're talking about a level of contentment... Was it an upright card or was it reversed?
It was reversed, Justin.
When reversed, the Nine of Cups or the Nine of Diamonds?
Hearts
tells you that there's a level of unhappiness.
Oh my God!
A lack of fulfillment, disappointment, underachievement, arrogance, and snobbery. The tarot cards don't lie.
I am shook to my core.
If you look back at our questions about the vibes, Scotty Barnes, Masai Ujiri, and Fred VanVleet, it's hard to say that the tarot cards lied.
Well, I have to say it's been a successful unveiling of this deck. Well, a little bit caught
off guard. Snap out.
Thank you for participating, folks. That was our inaugural tarot card reading.
More to chew on when it comes to the Toronto Raptors.
Well, what was the most interesting result for you?
I don't know about interesting, but I think the way
it
depicted Masai Ujiri on the horse, praise from everyone on the ground.
Bet on Masai,
not on a
trust
horse,
Masai.
That couldn't be more accurate in terms of how we look at this man. But just because you're on the horse, just because you are extolled, just because you receive all the praise in the world, doesn't mean that you can't experience failure and make mistakes yourself. So I think while we will always hold him in high regard, we have to be able to criticize him. We have to be able to at least question if the next move he makes is the right one. And I think when looking at the rest of this Raptors season, what that direction is, what the move is, what the decision is, what decisions are made, I think that's the most important thing. And it won't change the fact that he's on the horse, but it could change
the direction.
the direction, and really the overall success or failure.
The vibe question just really illuminated for me what I had been thinking and feeling. A selfishness, an arrogance, a lack of communication, a disconnect. I mean, that's what it feels like from the outside looking in. And that a lot of that stems with, have you lost control of this team? Are they playing for each other? Which direction are you going? I will say, the text line loves it.
Hope
Scott
so.
From Georgetown.
Wonder if there's a text line in a traditional tarot reading.
No. Scott from Georgetown says, love the tarot card segment. Very entertaining and well done by both of you. Just don't integrate it with your betting segment.
Look at us just patting ourselves on the back before we even get to break.
Well, I'm just sharing the information. You guys are going to need those cards for the Leafs come playoff time. Kevin from Hamilton.
Oh, we will be doing a Leafs tarot reading.
Honey, they're staying here. They're going to be in my bag all the time now. I'm going to get in traffic and pull them out and say, am I getting out of this anytime soon?
This is the sort of power, though, you can't.
No, you don't want to abuse it.
Yeah.
It's a once in a while. Like, this was a very important time for this, for clarity. But I'm not going to do it next week.
No, it's a landmark moment here.
When we ask if, you know, Pontus Holmberg is really a star.
Seeing more clearly now about the Toronto Raptors.
Well, I see that our next guest is Nick Kypreos. Is he on the push for Pontus NHL All-Star vote team? I can guarantee you, I looked in the future, and he is. That's next in the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.